It's like you've died, but you're still here, and you're trying to figure out how to navigate a life of a person that you don't recognize anymore, of emotions that you've never felt before, these massive emotions.
Kia ora and welcome to the C Word, Kiwis Talk About Cancer. I'm your host, Helen King, and this is the podcast for cancery people. Today is the last episode in the very special C Word series, Not Today Cancer. Over the past few weeks, I've featured amazing women who have found a way to give cancer the middle finger. If you've been listening, you'll know that they've each created something in very different ways that helps others who are going through breast cancer. So make sure you're subscribed on iTunes or on Spotify and go back and listen to those first two episodes, because I may be biased, but they are pretty awesome. Today I am joined by Australian Al Veach, who at just 27 was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2019. Following treatment, which included a double mastectomy, she wrote an article about her experience. It was a very honest account of the reality of breast cancer. Now, I'm going to warn you that there is swearing throughout this episode. So if you are not a fan of swearing, maybe skip this episode or pretend you didn't hear it. Her book, Hey Cancer, Fuck You, was inspired from her desire to advocate for better support for people who are going through or have been through breast cancer. She is a National Breast Cancer Foundation Australia ambassador and inspires others through her Instagram page, Breasties for Life, by sharing her own experience. Hey, well, thank you so much for joining me, Al. It is really cool to have you on the show to be able to talk about your upcoming book.
Thank you so much for having me. It's very exciting.
You're actually my first Australian guest as well, so you can...
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You have that honour.
Neighbours, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I came across your Instagram profile and I love the message that you have, really, and I guess, you know, your effervescent personality really comes out through your feed. But what I love about what I've seen is your honesty about your experience. And I realise you're doing a book, which, Hey Cancer, Fuck You, is just the best title. So I'd love to start with that, of how Hey Cancer, Fuck You came about.
I've always loved to write, and I never really had anything big enough to write about. And then I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I thought, if there's ever a time to write a book, it's probably now. I wanted to make it something really special, and I was noticing on a lot of online support groups that I was on, there were so many women who were so resentful and going through so much emotional pain and didn't know who to turn to. They didn't have people to talk to. And we were all just really angry about our situation and frustrated that there was this lack of support. And I just thought, if there was one thing that we could all say to our cancer, it would probably be, fuck you.
Yes.
So I thought, I wanted to try to get women to start to use their voices in one way or another to express their experiences. And I know that I most enjoy expressing myself through writing. And it can be really hard to speak about your experience out loud, especially when you're constantly being shut down. And I thought, I'm going to try to encourage women to write about their experience. I know it can be really cathartic to write, and it's still getting everything out that they want to say and giving a big fat middle finger to cancer at the same time.
Yes. Yes. I so relate to that. I was reading an interview that you had done, and it just hit the right note for me. And it, because it says, women who were angry and hurting and deeply and wholly, both physically and emotionally, and you're talking about, you know, writing about the experiences of young women who've had cancer. And that really hit me, because that was my experience too, of the physical and emotional hurt. And I don't know if it's any different for women who are maybe a bit older when they're diagnosed, but I do feel that there is almost a unique experience when you're younger. There's a...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but yeah, that deep sense of grief when it happens.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's grief. And it's like you've died, but you're still here, and you're trying to figure out how to navigate a life of a person that you don't recognize anymore, of emotions that you've never felt before, these massive emotions. And I think, you know, we were talking the other day about how the emotional side of it is almost worse than the physical treatment that you go through, because you have all of that treatment and it's done, and then your doctors are kind of like, okay, we'll see you later, you know, see you in a year or 6 months or whatever for a checkup, and you're left to your own devices and no one talks to you about dealing with things emotionally. You're not given emotional connections or support unless you're speaking to women in the breast cancer community during your experience. And it just kind of, the deep sense of grief that you feel of what on earth has just happened to me, my life, my body, what's happening to my mind. And it can just feel never ending. And I think, like, I honestly feel my emotional pain physically sometimes. It just feels that deep and raw.
Yeah. I've been sitting here nodding like one of those dogs that people put in the back of their cars. Because I just relate to this so much. And I feel when you talked about it feels like a part of you has died, I thought, that is such a good description of it, because you do go through something that changes you. You can't deny how much it changes you. And I sort of explained to people, they almost felt like I related to the world differently after my cancer diagnosis, because part of it just made no sense to me. I thought, how the hell did this happen? And I had no answers for that, and that was really hard to reconcile.
Yeah, I think I'm very much the same with that, because before all of this happened, I had been diagnosed with an autoimmune brain disease, and I am very much a problem solver, and I knew how to navigate all of that. I could sort out my doctor's appointments. I was organized all the time. I wasn't feeling the effects emotionally because I was seeing a psychologist to the point where we were able to manage it. And then this happened, and it was like I just lost all of those, what I would say were qualities about myself. And I've always thought of myself as a strong person, as a strong woman, and I've never felt so weak in my life as I have since my breast cancer diagnosis, because I just don't know what to do with any of it.
No, and I have found it very difficult to plan I don't know if positive is the right word, because I do want to touch on that, you know, that toxic positivity that you mention in terms of your book. But I feel like after my diagnosis, I could no longer trust that things were going to be okay. And so planning feels scary. And
yes. I completely agree.
And I was kind of stuck in this limbo of going, what do I do, you know?
Yeah, I think I was very much the same in, you very much question the universe in a way of, how did this happen? Why did this happen? How do I now trust that things aren't going to get worse, or something bad isn't going to happen again, that my cancer isn't going to come back? You start to find it hard to trust your own body. So any little ache or pain that you feel, it's like, oh my God, it's come back. And also planning, like I have just recently had a birthday, and in the weeks leading up to it, I had horrible anxiety and depression, because I just kept thinking, do I celebrate my birthday not knowing whether or not I'm going to have more birthdays in the future that I'll get to celebrate? Do I grieve this birthday? What do I do with it? I just don't know what to do. And I find celebrations really triggering because you think, even though at the moment I'm in remission, especially as young women, we know that our chance of our cancer coming back is much higher. And you, especially when you're sitting around a table with your family or your friends, you can't help but think, should I really take this in because I don't know what the future holds? I think some people are able to take that on and make a really positive situation out of it. But I just can't. I really struggle with that. I can't do that. I find it more triggering and upsetting than wanting to like take life on and really celebrate those occasions, I think.
Yeah, and it is difficult because I flip between thinking, no, stuff it, I've just got to keep living my life and live as though it's never going to come back and you know, that sort of thing, to just being paralysed by that fear. And because I love this sort of stuff around toxic positivity, because I just keep a positive mind and you're okay, you're doing so well and all of this sort of thing. And I found that really hard because I wanted to be positive. Of course you do. You sort of want to be like, you know, this fucking thing is not going to kill me. But at the same time, those feelings are so overwhelming. You cannot be positive all the time. Like, you have to admit and acknowledge the fear.
Yes, absolutely. And I think too, even my doctors, when they say, you know, you've had a double mastectomy, it's the best preventative treatment that you can have to avoid it coming back in the future, I can't take that seriously because it was a 1% chance that I would develop breast cancer as a young woman. So then when they say it's a 1% chance that it could come back, that's not comforting to me at all. Yeah, it's really hard also with the toxic positivity to, you know, I think people think they're being helpful, but really you don't need to fix everything for everyone when they're talking to you about something difficult that they're going through. That's the same for women going through breast cancer. When they're telling you how they're feeling and they're having a shit day and they want to cry or they're struggling or whatever, you don't need to fix it for them. You just need to sit and listen, because a lot of the time, if you're telling them things are going to be okay when we really don't know if they're going to be okay, you're kind of dismissing what they're going through and they don't feel heard. And I know that that's my experience and the experience of many women I've spoken to. So I think although intentions are in the right place, sometimes it's best to just sit and listen and let that person tell you how they're feeling. Empathize with them in the most simple way possible. Just say, I'm sure that's really hard for you and I'm sorry you're going through that. It doesn't have to be anything much. But sometimes saying, oh, just be positive, or things are going to be okay, or even sometimes I find when people say you look great, I find that really triggering because it's like, oh, okay, like, do you know what my body's been going through lately?
Yeah. Oh, it's, and that body stuff is so challenging, I think. You know, I had a mastectomy and no reconstruction, and it is such a process accepting the way your body looks. And I know from other people who, you know, either had a double mastectomy with reconstruction or had the reconstruction on the mastectomy side, there's also a process in that because they don't look like your breasts.
No, and they never will be again. And that's the thing. I refer to my, what used to be my breasts, as my chest now. I can't refer to them as my breasts because they're not. They're, my breasts are gone. And that's another thing that I grieve every single day. Sometimes I'll say my boobs because I've, you know, fake boobs, but that's very rare. And I didn't realize either how much of a connection I had to my breasts until it was time for them to be taken away from me. Everything that you have to go through to reconstruct, if that's what you choose to do. Like, I'm coming up to my fourth surgery now, and reconstruction doesn't always go as planned. You have to go back for things to be fixed up, or sometimes it fails completely, so you have to have a completely different reconstruction. And then you're trying to deal with that and the loss of your breasts. And then you get people saying things like, oh, but at least you got a free boob job. And it's like, oh, that is one of the most frustrating things to hear. Yeah. Or I had someone say, oh, well, at least it wasn't an important body part that you lost. You hear things like that and it makes you realize how little people understand what you're going through.
I agree, yeah. And as you were talking, I'm curious to know whether this is the same in Australia, but sometimes we get told here that breast cancer is the friendly cancer.
I've heard that one.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes, I feel sometimes the marketing around breast cancer awareness has done a disservice to actually what having breast cancer is like.
Yes.
That sort of pinkification and the, because breasts are fun and all of that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. But I always think that for me, breast cancer was brutal. It was a brutal experience.
Yeah. I think too, also the option of staying flat after surgery is very rarely given to women. It's, we're going to do the single or double mastectomy, and then what reconstruction do you want? These are your options. And I think that says a lot about the way women are seen in society, what our bodies need to look like or should look like. The thing that you said about how boobs are fun. So it's like we should still have boobs, or what people would think of boobs after we've had them removed. And it's like, is that to make other people feel comfortable? Is it to fit in? What's the reasoning behind all of that? And I was never offered to go flat. Personally, I don't think I would have, but I think women that do go flat are often making that decision by themselves and don't maybe have as much guidance as women who are going through reconstruction. So that probably creates even more isolation in an experience like this. And I think like more power to women that do decide to go flat. I think that's such an amazing thing to do, because you're taking control of your decision making and your agency for your body. And I think that's just incredible.
One of the things that you wrote about your book was wanting to give women their voices back. And I want people to shut up and listen. And I love that, because it is, we kind of, even if you are someone who maybe, because I do know how to advocate for myself, I can be, I know how to kind of navigate the health system, but you are so damn vulnerable when you've had a cancer or a huge event like this, that it just sort of strips away some of that ability to stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
And so I love that is one of the kind of the themes of what you do.
Yeah, I think I'm trying, and I'm learning just as much as I am posting about it. I'm trying to do it with women because I also know very much how to stand up for myself, how to advocate for myself. But it's like things, you kind of go into shutdown mode when you're faced with a doctor or a surgeon, because it's like this power imbalance. And even though you know what is right for you and you've thought about it before, you've thought about what you want to say, all of that just goes out the door when you go into an appointment. And I think you really need to push yourself you do have to be brave and think, there's going to be a time where I'm not seeing this doctor or surgeon or oncologist anymore. And am I going to be happy with myself after all of that is over, and the decisions that I've made for my own body? Because there's nothing worse than knowing that the decisions that you're making for yourself are right, not listening to yourself, and then afterwards thinking, I should have listened to myself.
Oh, it's so true. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so true. It's really, I think it's really tough navigating you know, even if you are someone who feels that they're, you know, I guess confident or assertive, yeah, it's such a difficult thing. And I don't think people realise that with cancer as well, is that it impacts so many parts of your life that you didn't realise it would.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think too, for women that are, even if you are a very assertive woman and you're able to, you know, lay out what you want for yourself and create boundaries, if you can't do that in a doctor's appointment, I would really recommend that you take someone with you to your doctor's appointment that can do that for you. Tell them, you know, what you want to happen in the appointment, what your expectations are, what the outcomes are that you want. And if you kind of freeze up in the appointment, then they can start to speak up for you and say, well, I've spoken to Elle about this and she's told me exactly what she wants. So how do we make that happen? Because then at least the doctor is still aware of your expectations and you can't then say, well, or they can't say, well, you never told me that you wanted that.
So there, I mean, there's so many other facets to the book as well, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about it, especially the letters from 40 women under 40. Tell me a bit about what you learned from reading the letters and in that process.
It was really, really interesting reading all of these letters, and it was really hard reading some of them. Some women have lost their mums to breast cancer, so I have one amazing woman who sent her eulogy in as her letter. And reading things like that, or reading what women have been through with the loss of friends and family, with the effects it's had on their body, both during and after cancer, if they're going through hormone treatment, it really, like, even my eyes have been opened up to how similar our situations are, but how incredibly unique they are at the same time. And that we're all joined together by this horrible disease. One thing I saw in a lot of the letters was anger and hurt, and we need more, women saying we need more support without saying we need more support, because I don't feel like a lot of women can say I need help right now, because you think going through cancer, it's obviously a hard thing to go through, and you expect to be affected by it in one way or another. And some women think that that's normal and that they don't need to ask for help. So they just kind of roll with the punches and take it as it comes. And I'm reading these letters and I'm thinking, I wish more people knew what you were going through, and they will soon when they read it. And once that happens, I hope that we can start to make change in a lot of different areas, because one of them being women being listened to in the medical community when they go to the doctor with a health concern. That was one of the massive topics that came up for me, is that women were going to their doctors and saying, there's something wrong with my breast. Can you please do a mammogram or ultrasounds? The doctors were saying, it's hormonal, it's an infection, it's because you're breastfeeding, this or that. Not just giving them the referral and sending them to get the mammogram done. And by the time these women are diagnosed, some of them have stage 3 breast cancer, and that can be avoided if we just listen to women. It's just so frustrating when you're reading these letters of women that have stage 3 breast cancer, thinking, if you had a doctor, and it's absolutely not the fault of the woman in any way, but if the medical community listened to women more and stopped telling us that we couldn't get mammograms because of our breast density or whatever other excuse they want to use, we could be having less deaths from breast cancer, more early detection, less invasive treatments. Our families are not going to have to see us going through these incredibly emotional and traumatic events. Financially, I think things would be much better off. Women are being, like, their bank accounts are empty after their cancer treatment. I think the positive things that could come out of just listening and putting the ego away for a second for doctors and trusting that women know their bodies, it blows my mind to think about the ways that we could be saving lives and saving money, creating change, respecting women more. The list is endless, but I think that's one thing, is just listen to women. When they're telling you something is wrong, listen to them.
It's so true. And it's quite uncanny, because I was having this conversation with my mum recently, because that happened to me as well. I don't have children, and I was diagnosed with non-lactating mastitis. And I was told by the nurse, and this wasn't at my usual GP practice, it was an after hours one, and I was told by the nurse to not worry, you're too young for it to be anything, you know, bad. And the doctor said, oh, I should probably send you on for for ultrasound, just to see if that is an abscess. But it wasn't, there was mm-hmm. no sort of, yep, you should definitely go and get that looked at, because, you know, exactly. all lumps need to be investigated. And I feel like I was really lucky, because I have health insurance, and so I went, no, you've got to go and get this done. And I was able to get it done with that, and then the rest is history.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you said, it should have been like an automatic, you've got a lump, we need to get it tested thing. And mm-hmm. I think I've actually learned last year, and I didn't know this before, but there's actually a protocol that doctors need to follow when you go and see them about a breast concern, and it doesn't matter how old you are. So the first thing they need to do is a physical exam. And because I didn't have a lump and I had 11 centimetres of cancer removed from my breast. So a lump is not always what you need to look out for. And I think a lot more doctors need to be aware of that, because another thing is I had really bad breast pain, and doctors will often say to you, oh, well, if you've got breast pain, it's not breast cancer. So they do the physical exam, and then regardless of age, once again, you should be sent for a mammogram, an ultrasound, or an MRI. And if something is found, they're meant to do a biopsy. And a lot of women don't actually know that this protocol is meant to be followed, because a lot of doctors don't follow it, and they don't tell women that this is out there and should be followed.
I'm going to have to look into that for New Zealand as well, because I can imagine it's probably very similar. Because, you know, that's exactly what I said to Mum, is that it has nothing, it doesn't impact anyone else but the person if they need to go and get a scan. Like,
Yep. Exactly. If they're worried about, you know, not finding an abnormality because of breast density or whatever it is, that's the worst thing that's going to happen, is you're going to send a woman to get a mammogram. You're doing the right thing as a responsible doctor and caretaker of your patients. And if you don't find something, then great. But if you do, you've potentially just saved a woman's life.
Exactly. And that's what it really comes down to. And I mean, you and I are examples of that. I mean, I interviewed a woman recently who, exactly as you mentioned, you know, she had found something, and this is in Canada, and it was kind of, oh, no, it will be nothing. And then she had a baby, and, you know, it just kept getting missed. And now she has advanced breast cancer, and I just had this sense when we were talking, what a fucking waste that is. You know,
that is exactly right. It's a waste,
because she's not even going to reach her 40th birthday. And I just had this sense, like, when we were talking, because I was thinking, if we lived in the same country and we crossed paths, we'd probably be friends, because, you know, when you sort of meet a person, you think, oh, yeah, we really kind of get on. And just felt so profoundly sad to me that this woman I was talking to may not be here next year, you know?
I know, yeah. And that's another thing that I think women, because we make so many wonderful friends in the breast cancer community, and you know that if it's not me that ends up passing away from my breast cancer, I'm going to lose friends. Yep. And that's just as bad. It's just as traumatic because you're creating relationships with these amazing women. And that's another uncertainty, is which one of us is breast cancer going to take from our families, from our friends, from the universe that we're meant to be living in. And it's just horrible.
Yeah, it's really challenging. It has been so amazing to talk to you. I knew I'd love chatting with you and finding out more about what you're doing. Now, when is the book going to be available?
So it's coming out in May. So over here in Australia, I'm an ambassador for the National Breast Cancer Foundation. And we have a fundraiser for the Go Pink campaign every year. So that starts in May, and that's when the book will be released, and it goes until the start of July. The books will be selling for $40 each, and every single cent that is made from the books will be going straight to the National Breast Cancer Foundation. And one thing that, because I know sometimes people are a little bit uncertain about where their money goes when they're donating to charities and organizations. But for every dollar that is donated to the National Breast Cancer Foundation, $1.74 is unlocked from the National Breast Cancer Foundation. So there's nearly $2 for every dollar going towards saving women's lives. And I'm so excited. I'm trying to reach a $20,000. I've got a $20,000 goal this year, and I'm hoping I can reach it so we can start to get some more research happening for women, save more lives, hopefully have zero deaths by 2030. And I mean, in the meantime, hopefully creating more emotional and mental health support for women.
Yeah, that's amazing. And closer to the time, I'll chuck some more links up, and I'd love to be able to support the sale and things. But in the meantime, if people listen and think, oh, I want to check more of what you do out, where can we find you on social media?
So I'm on Instagram at Breasties for Life, and there is lots of pink on my page, so you can't miss it. And yeah, you can check me out there. My posts are, I don't sugarcoat my posts whatsoever. I don't think breast cancer is something you can sugarcoat, and I really want my page to be as honest and welcoming and supportive for as many women as possible. I really want to empower as many women as possible during their experience, because this is a really shit thing to go through. And if you can use your voice and use your story, even if it's just to empower yourself, then you've done a really bloody good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been awesome talking.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining me today and for tuning in to this special series, Not Today Cancer. So next week, I will be talking to two men who have experienced breast cancer, and it was a really interesting interview for me because although there were some similarities in terms of experiences of diagnosis, I was really struck by the difference of experience of these two men going through cancer than some of the women I've spoken to who have been through breast cancer. So tune in for that, and then I would love to hear from you and let me know whether you had a different experience, whether what you thought of the interview. I really love hearing from you guys, so head over to Facebook, follow me, send me a message. I'd love to hear from you. You may have also heard last week, and on Facebook I posted the details, that I'm going to be presenting at PodFest Global. So on Tuesday, March the 2nd at 4 p.m, I will be giving a seminar. The title of the seminar is I Had Cancer and All I Got Was This Podcast. I'll be talking about how I used my experience of having breast cancer and turned it into a platform for others to tell their stories, and really the process of setting up the podcast and
all the things that I learned. And yeah, I'd love for you guys to join me. If you guys want to head along to the online event, I do have a special promo code. It is CWordPodFest. All the links are on my Facebook page. I will chuck them in the show notes again. Head along. There will be so many amazing international speakers talking about a range of topics all to do with podcasting. The C Word Kiwis Talk About Cancer airs every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
I'll be your naughty girl. Up on my left eye, checking out your scenery. Up on my right eye, right where it needs to be. No matter how I look at it, you look good to me. Still, I'm looking for the perfect view. The way I see it, that's right next to you. I know you've probably heard it before, but still, I love it when you flex like that for real. So don't stop doing what you do when you do it. I just wanna be a part of it when you do it. I feel like a wally if I don't pursue it, and I can't go through it. So let's get
she
through it.
No look at those thighs, it's in her eyes. She's good to go. She can satisfy my mind, body, and
come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me. I see you glancing me, that's why I'm asking, B. So let's party, B. Come and dance with me, dance with me.
If I'm out on my own, then I can look at you looking at me. If I'm out on a date, then I just shut my eyes, then I can't see. Get away from the bar, tell your boyfriend, hold your jaw. And dance with
you, dance with me, that's why I'm asking, B. So let's party, B. Come and dance with me. I know you didn't come out to stand and stare. You bought new shoes and you did up your hair. You made a real effort tonight, and it shows. I can tell by your face you don't want to be alone, because the mood is right and the time is now. And if you can't do it, I'll show you how. What you gotta do is get loose, let go. Just throw a couple shakes, put your skills on show.
Something I can do, I can get on the telephone.